This week's show with Lindsay Gradoff is sponsored by the Embroiderers Guild of America at egausa.org. The Embroiderers Guild just accomplished a monumental feat here in early September by holding their national seminar live in Chicago. And they made it possible for FiberTalk to be there to cover the show. So if you have never been to a national seminar or couldn't go to this one or were hesitant to go because of the virus, we have put together 18 videos that amount to 5 hours and 40 minutes or so of coverage of the national seminar. You can find all those at the FiberTalk YouTube channel. And when you get done, you'll have a good sense of what went on and what we experienced at the national seminar. One of the videos that you'll want to check out is the complete tour of all of the classes for the 2022 seminar in New York. It's a beautiful array of projects at all levels and of all types. And then go to the EGA website, egausa.org, and sign up for classes. Of course, it helps if you become a member of EGA, and I highly recommend that. You can either join through a local chapter, or you can do as I've done and be a member at large. Also, while you're at the site, be sure and just visit the gallery just for some nice eye candy. So thanks to the EGA for making it possible for us to cover the show. Please visit the FiberTalk YouTube website so you can enjoy what we experienced in Chicago, and then visit the EGA website to sign up for classes and become a member. And now on to our show with Lindsay Gradoff. Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr.
And I'm Beth Ellicott.
And you're listening to Fiber Talk, the twice weekly podcast for needlework artists. Our artist this week from Tokyo, Lindsay Gradoff. Lindsay, welcome.
Hi, thank you very much for having me.
Yeah, you do some fun stuff.
Thanks. I think it's fun at least.
Yeah, freeform embroidery. But the first thing I got to learn about is this concept of, is it the waste nothing? Is it Motani?
Oh, yeah, Motainai.
Say that again.
Sorry, my Japanese has gotten pretty bad with COVID, but Motainai.
Okay.
Which is kind of just a expression or ethos of don't waste, use what you have, or at least appreciate what you have. And so, it's definitely an inspiration behind my work.
And so is this born out of religious beliefs, or is it just a cultural practice?
I guess you could say it's perhaps a bit of both for Japanese people, at least. The idea of Shintoism and how objects have a spiritual quality or an inherent value in them. Plus, Japan is a very small country and resources, are scarce, especially in the past, things like textiles, especially cotton. And so the idea of use what you have until you can't anymore. Everything has value, which is something I really enjoy.
Yeah, you're talking to two people who never hesitate to consume new stuff. So,
I consume new things, too.
Yes.
I definitely do come from a kind of a minimalist appreciation and anti-consumerism kind of mindset. And so finding that in Japanese culture was kind of a nice, it really resonated with me. And so that's just my own personal thing. But I do also, I buy new things.
Oh, okay. Because you are American. You're kind of forced to.
I am American after all. Very true.
Yeah, you really need to.
It's the American way.
That's right.
I'm in the market for a new iPad, actually.
Yeah. Oh, there we go. See? All right, you're normal. Yeah. We'll take that.
Well, thanks.
Yeah, so the Japanese language now. So you went to Tokyo to teach in, is it American school, or how does that work?
How does that work? That's kind of the long, meandering story. I first started teaching in Hiroshima, actually, and was there for about 5 years. I did the JET program. I'm not sure if you're familiar.
No.
it's just a teacher exchange program. But I, yeah, I, so I, my partner and I came together in 2008. So at the height of like the American economic meltdown.
Yeah, good timing.
Well, no, that's exactly. We were offered jobs, and it's like, yes, of course, jobs.
Oh, yeah, there we go. Yeah, take that. Yeah.
I was just graduated from school. I was like, yeah, I need a job. And my background is in teaching, and so we got offered jobs through the JET program, and were placed in Hiroshima, and in a city called Kure, actually. So it's like a small shipping town, quite rural. But I was there for 5 years. And while there, I got my master's in education, and the contract for that time was only for 5 years. And at that time, when the time was up, my partner and I were like, well, do we stay or do we go? I was like, well, I like it. You know, I'd like to try Tokyo. And so I took a job at a private school in Chiba and taught there for 6 years, and then just recently quit, ironically, right when COVID happened. we'd moved to Tokyo before then. Like, we live downtown near Skytree, actually, that really big tower.
Mm. Yes.
But, yeah, so quite urban. But I took a job, right when COVID happened at a, this is kind of funny, a French all-girls Catholic private school. And I teach English.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Weird story. Yeah.
We need a committee to put this one together. I can tell. Yeah.
Yes.
It's a mouthful. But yeah, I teach students who have had their education disrupted. Basically, there's a kind of student in Japan called a kikokusei, which means their parents took them abroad at a very young age, like their diplomat children, or children of diplomats, sorry, or like doctor's children or things like that. And so they're not particularly fluent in either language. And so I teach language arts to 13 and 14 year olds, so 7th and 8th grade.
Okay. It interests me because my wife's niece and her husband teach in American schools all over the world. They've been to four or five different countries, and they're in Malta teaching. And they're American schools, but they're in other parts of the world. And so it sounds like it's this kind of a deal.
Yeah, there was definitely those kind of schools in Tokyo. But no, this is a it's a French school. It started like in the late 1800s. Mm. Like, my principal's a nun.
Oh.
Yeah. It's weird. But it was originally like a French missionary, like a Catholic missionary school that's just stuck around.
Oh, okay. And your partner teaches too?
Yeah, he actually teaches at the same school.
Oh.
So yeah. It's a weird situation.
Hey. Whatever works. So you've quit now so that you can do embroidery full time or something else?
Yeah, no, I wish. I'm on summer vacation right now, and I'm due back, I think, September 3rd. I quit my job in Chiba because this new French private Catholic school, girls school, offered me part-time, but part-time is still, it's a lot of work. It's a lot of teaching, but I'm in the country. I can stay in Japan because of my current visa situation, basically, which is boring to talk about, but, I need a day job basically in order to stay in the country, and art's not a day job.
Here, right. I'm making a note now.
at least according to the Japanese government, right?
Yeah, I mean, you can get an artist visa, but you have to, have exhibitions at like the Whitney or the Hirshhorn, and I don't know, be Banksy or something. And so that's not me. But yeah, I'm trying to get out of it. I've been teaching for 15 years now, and later in life situation, you realize maybe I don't want to teach is where I'm at currently. So, or at least not English.
Art is not. Okay. Art is not a. Yeah. Making
according
a note.
To the according to the Japanese government.
Yes. Well, I think it's according to a lot of governments, but whatever.
Yeah, no, it's true. Yeah.
Yeah. So how does embroidery come into this? Is this something you just had as a pastime, or when did you start that?
Yeah, pretty recently, maybe six years ago, I guess. When I was in Hiroshima working my master's, I was pretty burnt out teaching and going to school at the same time. And at that time, a lot of my coworkers were artists on sabbatical, actually, because the JET program offers you it's pretty well paid, and then you can take a break from your job back home, come teach in Japan for a few years, and then usually people go back home. So a lot of my coworkers were actually artists back in their home countries, and so we do like art, paint, wine night once a week. And from that, kind of got turned on to painting watercolors as a fun hobby. I did that for maybe 7 or 8 years, actually, just kind of doodles. I never really shared them. They're pretty silly. But once I moved to Chiba, I really love clothes. Like, I'm a real clothes horse. I like fashion. And in Japan, it's hard to find clothes that fit, especially for foreign bodies. And so I took up kind of garment making with independent pattern designers.
Mm-hmm.
Clothing, textiles in Japan, Tokyo in particular, is fantastic. Like, there's the whole Nippori area shopping district that sells nothing but just bolts of fabric. And so for, I don't know, like a year and a half, I just really went down the rabbit hole of garment making, including like knitting and things like that. But like I said, I'm kind of into, or at least the concept of minimalism, and I'm a bit of an anti-consumerist, and I realized like I'm still buying new things here. Like, it's not really solving my problem. and I wanted like a creative outlet, and making new clothes isn't really, for me at least, wasn't sustainable, especially, apartments are very small in Japan and there's only so many things you can own. And so I really was just kind of like on Pinterest, like looking at, as it goes, like, I need a hobby. I'm bored. And I came upon, it's really that straightforward. I'm sorry. I'm not very mysterious so I was just like on the internet and found embroidery, and I was like, oh, that's interesting. I've never been like, even when I did watercolors and things like that, I've never been interested or good at figurative illustration or drawing, for that matter. Like, I've never had an art class. Like, my parents weren't creative people. Like, no one taught me to sew as a kid. Like, I'm kind of all self-taught. And so I bought, an embroidery hoop and some DMC floss thread, which is so expensive in Japan. That was a terrible idea. and started playing around with that. And then from that, as the rabbit hole goes, you get recommended things. And I suddenly realized, like, oh my God, there's this thing called sashiko. And Japan actually has this huge, rich embroidery tradition. And I had no idea up until like 5 years ago.
And so how about, isn't there something called boro?
Boro is the result. I'm no expert. Being self-taught, I'm not very well read. I'm sure someone listening to this who does live in Japan is shaking their fist at their keyboard in the future, screaming, "No, she's got it all wrong." but boro is the result of the sashiko. Like, it's like the end piece that's been mended and repaired over and over and over. You can't make boro these days. Like, it was a piece of history that we can't reproduce now. It resulted from extreme poverty and lack of resources. But sashiko is the technique of actually mending the fabric. And so the sashiko stitching is what I came upon first. And then from that, learned what boro is. And, I collect it a bit. If I find a piece, I try and buy it. But I never stitch on it. And I never, it's a historical item. But yeah, it's gotten mm-hmm. really trendy these days. I know, especially in the West, and like the word gets kind of thrown around a bit, I think. Like, not everything is boro if it's old, but it's like that beautiful kind of layered patchwork that you see is the final product.
Right. And I see that in your work, the layering you do with your pieces, where you add textiles on top of another textile and then do your stitching on top. And that's what made me ask, because it reminds me of that. But yours is very new and vibrant, especially with the colors you use.
Yeah, I do. So I use pieces. All my work is secondhand, like all the textiles. And so some of the textiles I do use are like antique or vintage dyed in scraps that do have some stitching on them already. But it's not boro, like it hasn't been overly repaired, and so I don't feel quite so guilty about stitching on top of it. But yeah, it is layered, and I think that comes from mostly I tried quilting for a bit. Like I was really inspired by, like, I love color, first of all. Like that's a whole other sidebar, but I love color. And I found quilting through the quilters of G's Bend and like their use of color mm-hmm. and pattern. And I was really inspired by like their color choices and using how those color choices kind of came from what they already had on hand as well. And I tried quilting for a bit, but I'm a really impatient person, a really imprecise person. And the idea of spending time to measure something and to make the seams look nice and organized is just not up my alley at all. I don't have the patience for it. I admire it, but I really don't have the patience. And so the layering of, or the way I interpreted quilting, my kind of slapstick way, was just like, I'll just cut out fabric like a quilt and then I'll stitch over it to keep it down. Which is how I think the stitching got so dense, because I used lots of different pieces. And to keep all the fabric down, you need a lot of stitches. And so, yeah, it's kind of my lazy man's roundabout way to quilting.
So you mean your points don't meet?
What's a point?
Okay. Just checking.
Don't know what that is. No, I admire it. Like, I really wish I had the patience and time to do it. But yeah, I'm kind of like a willy-nilly, figure it out as you go kind of person. And so this is just the result of my work ethic, ethos. I'm not sure what you'd call it.
Yeah. Well, see, for me, your free-form embroidery, so many pieces of what people call free-form embroidery just don't work for me, because to me they just get to be a mess, and to put it crudely, I mean they just don't have any, I don't know, flow, shape, whatever to them. And I appreciate the free form and the want to just put down whatever inspires you, but then you know, that's what caught my eye about yours is there may not be a plan, but there sure seems to be a plan. There certainly is a place and a direction for my eye to flow through the piece. And so I really enjoy the work because of that. Is I feel like there's a starting point, there's a resting point, there's a flow and a direction. And I just enjoy that.
Well, thank you.
Now tell me there's no plan and you just...
it just happens. I mean, there's a plan and there isn't a plan. Like I don't keep a journal or like a notebook or a sketchbook. Like I don't have the time, quite frankly. Like if I had more time, if I could do it full time, maybe I would sketch things. But I find, this is kind of boring, but when I'm on the train, like going to work and things, I'm usually like thinking like, well, I've got this really cool blue and like, I've got this yellow and like, what if I did that? And, I will maybe plan a piece in my head for like a couple of days. Or if it's a bigger piece, like I've got a piece I want to do that I've had, you can't see me, but big air quotes planned for a couple of years now. And I just don't have the time, but I'll think about it, like the colors, the size for, I don't know, a couple of days up to a week. That seems kind of strange, but like I'm kind of, again, like I said, I'm making wild gestures you can't see either, but I'm kind of a willy-nilly all over the place person. And I think that's really reflected in my work. but I will plan a piece, and usually that's it's so yes, it is planned up to a certain point, but I never actually like write it down. That's because it takes so much time to make that I do have to be judicious with my time and how big of a piece I'm going to take on or something like that. But once I have a general like color palette in mind, I guess you could say, and the size, I think about, I do have a starting point. And if you look at my work, you can probably see it quite clearly, but I always start in a corner or start, like there's always a starting point and an ending point. And I like to think of it like, again, like I've never been to art school, so keep in mind this is all kind of self-taught, but I really like the idea of in photography, like the rule of thirds and having mm-hmm. like a kind of balance. And so I always enjoy in other people's work or other artists' work, the use of negative space. And so like, what can you get rid of or what doesn't need to be there, I guess. And so I do try to keep in mind the use of negative space, but also just to not cover up the beautiful fabric I'm using, because if I went all over the place crazy, you wouldn't see all the beautiful textiles underneath. And so that's kind of the balance I like to think about, or try to think about at least.
Yeah, well, that's just it. I mean, I see the rule of thirds at play without question in your piece. And yeah, and like I said, there's a place to rest the eyes, and you do allow that underlying fabric to come through. So basically your notebook is your head, it's your brain. And you just work it out there instead of sketching it out. So that, you know, that's legit. Why not?
I mean, I wish I had the time to maybe slow down, but I do keep extensive notes on my phone. Like if you read my notes, they probably seem really manic and absurd, but I really love, I mean, I really love living in Tokyo. Like people ask, like, isn't that crazy? Like the buildings, don't you get tired? I really actually like the buildings, the squares, the architecture. And I'm often making or borrowing, stealing color palettes from like the city around me. And so if I see like three buildings next to each other, it's like, oh, those are like, you know, blue, brown, and red. Like those are a cool color combination. Take a quick note and I'll let you know, think about those colors for a spell. And then usually inevitably or somehow it'll end up being a piece one day.
Everything that you have has really good contrast to it, bright colors and sharp contrast. Is that just the way you see it, or is that?
I mean, I really love color. Like I've always been that way. Growing up at least, like I was always like the creative kid in a very loud family. Like there was no painting or art really in my house. Parents used to joke like there's style and then there's Lindsay style. I had this really awesome neon rainbow sweater growing up from like the time I was 12 to 17. It was just horrifically bright, but people were like, yeah, that's Lindsay. it's pretty true. but I really, yeah, I just really enjoy color. I love high contrast things. Like eye-catching boldness is just something I've always enjoyed. Again, not having gone to school for art, I'm kind of learning it as I go, but I really, really enjoy like the work of like the Washington, what do you call it, the color field artists, like Mark Rothko and the guys who did the circles, what's his name? Jules Olitsky, or like Kenneth Noland or Alma Thomas, people like that, just using color and shapes in a deconstructed way and how they can play very easily with each other. Again, like I like minimal, simple things. And so using just simple shapes and colors can be really interesting if you give it time.
Well, clearly there's some artist in you. It's just coming out later in life. Ever think about formal schooling, or are you having too much fun just exploring it yourself?
Yeah, I mean, I just paid off all my student debt, so I'm not looking to take on any more. to be quite honest. But if, you know, yeah, if the opportunity presented itself, certainly, yeah, that would be fun, I think. But because, yeah, I is true. The last art class I ever took was fifth grade elementary school. Art just wasn't something encouraged growing up, and it was certainly not presented as like a viable source of income or like a way of life. And so now that I finally, am an adult and can make those decisions, it's like, you know what, maybe I will kind of focus on that. And it's just kind of exploded from there. So it's been fun.
Does
So you just read art books, or do like YouTube videos? Is that where you're gaining more knowledge about like composition and design?
it's kind of here and there. I buy a lot of art books, I have to be honest. Like the giant anthologies. I really like Agnes Martin. Just discovered her, and so I bought her art books. And I've been reading Keith Haring's journals this summer. So I do. Yeah, I read a lot. I watch YouTube videos of like artist biographies. I find those really fascinating. Podcasts, like there's some really cool podcasts I listen to. So yeah, like definitely I'm interested in that field, but it's all kind of self-taught on my own.
You mentioned the Tokyo architecture. Obviously, that influences what you do. But you're also in a country where art and culture is just well, it's obviously a dominant part of the history. Does that influence you? Has Japanese art and color palettes played a role in your work, or not so?
Again, like I'm slowly learning about it, but yeah, I really like the like kimono patterns. Again, like the high contrast. I think it's called katazome dyeing, like the block printing, repetitious patterns, but like red and white, or like just the kind of strange or unexpected color combinations you see sometimes. I recently came across this artist, and I can text you his name later if you'd like, but Samiro Yunoki. He does like these really vibrant printing styles. I think it's dyeing actually, but kind of primary color, kind of like kindergarten art room looking color palettes, but in like really cool, interesting shapes. As someone new, I just found, but yeah, there's certainly a artisan culture that's very much, still going on today.
Do you find that in the city, or do you have to go outside the city to tap into that?
It's here and there. If you know where to look, like Tokyo has like different neighborhoods, or like boroughs, and so like this area is known for this area is known for that. And I actually live in an area that's known for, I mean, several things, just like crafts in general. So Tokyo, there's an east side and west side. It's how people look at it. And east side is the older side, west side is the more modern side. And so the east side has those more old-fashioned craft type places. Like when tour or back when tourists could come visit me, take them to, this is this dye shop that's been around for 200 years, and you can like make your own dye, or there's this leather shop. There's all sorts of little shops all over the place. They're still very active in my neighborhood, like dye shops, indigo dyeing, lots of natural dyes getting popular these days. Yeah, it's everywhere. It's in the country, it's certainly there too, but it's harder to get to. You really need a car in Japan to like leave the city in a timely fashion, I think at least. And so I mean, with COVID at least, I haven't left Tokyo, like downtown Tokyo, since 2019.
Oh, gee. Okay.
So it's getting a little wild.
Yeah,
Yeah.
it's wrecking a lot of things, yes.
Yes. Yes, I hope you guys are okay.
We are.
Yeah, we're fine. But yeah, that would be hard to, for me at least, to be to be in the same area and not be able to travel outside of a city like that. But then I live in the country, so
yeah,
maybe it'd be more difficult for me.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, we're at a point now where it's like, do we stay or do we go? We've been here for so long. It's hard to imagine living somewhere else. But I think I'm definitely a city person. Like, I like the city. But that being said, in order for me to like leave Tokyo and see the country would be like an hour and a half train ride. And it depends like what kind of country you want to see. And with COVID, that's just not been possible. But yeah, it's kind of a bummer, but soon, hopefully it'll be over. Fingers crossed. So yeah.
Yeah, we can hope. Yep. When you do your embroidery, your art, really is art more than anything. Is there a statement there? What is it that's coming out of your head that shows up in your embroidery?
That's a good question. I have different styles. Like, I have like the wavy lines, I have the circles, the kind of square motifs, and so I think people ask me this all the time. I have such a hard time talking about it. It's just what comes out. Like, when I sit down to like draw or do something or do embroidery, like back when I first started, I tried to do sashiko and I just cannot make a straight line to save my life. really can't. And so I gave that up pretty quickly and was like, you know what? I'll just do these wavy lines. And it kind of emerged from there. But it's, I don't know. I look at it and like, it really is just, that's me. Like, it's my energy kind of like made physical. My students make fun of me, but they say I'm a very like swirly teacher. Like, again, you can't see my wild gesticulations with my hands, but I'm a very like physical, active kind of like, Miss Frizzle magic school bus type person. And
okay. All right.
Just like, I'm very, movie person.
So when we look at your art, we're seeing your personality then. It's not some statement or something. It's your personality. It's okay. I can see that. All right.
I look at it and I see my personality, especially like the wavy lines. But like, it's my, again, I don't have any background in figurative painting, but when I do like a freeform embroidery, yeah, it is some sort of meaning. Whatever I'm feeling that day or that time or the mood I'm in. But it's, yeah, I guess like using shapes and lines to kind of like capture my own meaning, if that makes any sense.
Well, yeah, I mean, it does, because you know, you look at, you know, some artists paint buildings, some artists paint landscapes, and you're just expressing your personality and mood in thread and cloth. And, you know, that's legit. That's fun. Because it, you know, when I looked at it, when I look at your art, I mean, I have some emotions that come out in the way that the lines flow and the way the colors work. And so I can see that. It's interesting. It's just a different kind of art and a different expression. So, oh, hey, yay for you.
Do you draw your lines out and then stitch over them, or you just go?
I don't draw anything, mostly because I'm impatient, and it's I don't use a hoop or anything, and so it usually will change anyways, and there's no point in making a line because it's gonna, like, the fabric will shift. It gets pretty warped and distorted. If it's a very big line, like the wavy lines I do, I will draw like one single line roughly of where I want it to go. But after that, I don't draw any lines. I don't draw any lines for the squares. It's just kind of choose a point. Like I said before, like, choose a point to start at, like what corner or certain area, and like where do I want it to end, and then try to reach there, while simultaneously tacking all the fabric down, like all the layers. And so how can I get from point A to point B, keeping the fabric down like a quilt, but also not covering up all the fabric at the same time, is something I'm thinking about at least.
So do you prefer to work on large pieces or small? I mean, if you had your choice, if apartment size wasn't an issue.
It really depends on my mood. I like working big, but space is an issue. It really is hard on my body to work so big because I don't use a hoop. And when it gets so big, like I'm working on the floor basically. And so it is hard on my body. But smaller things too. Yeah. Like an ideal size would be like a meter by a meter, I think. If I could just make pieces that size constantly, it'd be good, but it takes so much time to make. And so, you know, people approach me to like purchase things occasionally and it's like, I can't sell it. It took too much time. Like, I'm sorry. And so sometimes smaller pieces, I will make for people who are interested in purchasing it, for example, or for like a gallery or for a friend. And small is nice because, you know, they get done quicker. Like, it takes me like a week to do like a smaller piece. And so that can be a nice, like, what do you call it? A sampler. Like, before I make a bigger piece, I've usually tried it 2 or 3 times on a small version to see if it will work. And then once I'm like, okay, yeah, that does work, I'll go big.
So you use those little squares as samples then?
Kind of, yeah. Yeah, just because it is such a time commitment. I don't want to... And the fabric is so lovely, I wouldn't want to ruin it. And so, yeah, I definitely test. I guess that could be like a sketchbook of sorts, using those smaller squares as like a sampler before I, scale up.
Your pieces headed somewhere, like framing, or what? How do they end up? Framed? Yeah. Laying on a table? What do you do with them?
Yeah, I don't really know. I never, up until recently, I've never like had a goal for them. It's just, I just wanted to make them. And my partner was like, you should put those on Instagram. I was like, okay. And it just kind of erupted from there. I just made them because I enjoyed making them. Our apartment's quite small. And at the moment, they're just piled on top of a bookshelf. Like I make one, that I put it away and I start the next kind of thing is how it's been for years now. But I've had some opportunities offered to me recently where they do need to be framed. And I don't know if I can mention them here now because they haven't been like publicly announced yet, but I have an exhibition coming up in the end of September and then another one in October, and the work has to be framed. And so that's been a challenge because I don't want to have them professionally framed. Like, I don't want to have a new thing around something I purposely only used reclaimed materials for. And so recently I just bought a Dremel last night. and I plan on using, in addition to buying textiles, I buy antique like boxes and candy tins and interesting, just kind of junk, but usually kind of square shaped. And so my plan recently has been to frame them or display them by sewing them kind of directly into that box or candy tin. Something that could be on a wall or display that way. We'll see how that goes. I also have a friend who has made me some frames. I'm going to share those soon, hopefully, but he runs a special needs, differently abled adults day center where they do crafts and things like that. And so he's been having his students make me some handmade frames for my work, which has been pretty exciting too. So I never thought to frame it, though. Like, that was never my intention.
Yeah.
right.
It's hard.
Well, that's good that they're going to be exhibited, that people are going to see your work. And I like that you're staying true to the waste nothing concept in all the way through, rather than just going to buying a bunch of expensive, nice frames and putting this work in.
Seems a little silly. Right. But the framing thing has been... like holding me back, for lack of a better word. Because I have, people are like, oh, like, where's your gallery? Or like, people on the internet will email me like, where's your shop space? It's like, I have none of those things. Like, what are you talking about? Thank you for thinking that, but no. And so people, like, it's kind of the difference between, I'm at a point currently where, is it craft or is it art? Like, I don't know. Like, and so people asking me to frame it recently for these events coming up in the fall, it feels more like art by putting it in a frame. But framing itself is an art in itself. Like, it's really hard. I'm really out of my element here. So
it's art. Trust me, it's art. This is not craft.
Yeah,
this is not craft. No.
Thank you.
No. And I have to say, I was scrolling your Instagram account, and I just, your pants, those pants you made.
Which ones?
I just love. I think you made them. It was after March of this year for Mend March.
Oh yeah, yeah.
They had the circles, and those. Yeah. I'm just like, oh, I love those. And it's like you're walking art. You're walking art.
I made those for a competition, actually. There's the brand in Japan that's quite trendy. People in the States like it a lot, I know, but it's called Capital. I actually don't know how you say it. K-A-P-I-T-A-L. But it's like one of the original denim brands of Japan. And I really like their... I really like the brand. I only buy them secondhand because they're crazy expensive and I can't afford it, but waste nothing. But I saw this competition they were putting on for hand stitching, but the rule was you could only use this particular, type of trouser they produce from their own brand. I was like, well, I don't own any of those. And how unfair. And so I reached out to an acquaintance I know who used to work for them and underhanded said like, oh, it's so unfair and stinky that you have to own this pair of expensive pants just to enter the competition. And he very kindly was like, just take mine. And so he mailed them to me, unworn, never worn. And I worked on that. The deadline was really tight. It was like 2.5 weeks I had to finish those. So they're kind of haphazard. Like, if you see them up close, I don't know, they're actually not my favorite thing, to be honest. And I've only worn them once, and it was for that photo, which is a shame, maybe.
Yeah, but, it is, because I really do like them. I've got to send this to my daughter who lives in Chicago and say, look at these pants.
They're Japanese sizing, and so they're actually really awkward on me. Like, they fit kind of strange. And they're brown, like the base color is brown, and I don't wear any brown at all. And so I tried my best to cover them up with my colors in the time I had, but I guess that's the thing too, is like, when I'm done with something, I'm done with it. I don't want to touch it again. I don't want to see it again. I don't want to add to it later. And so even though I rushed through that project, and they're not my, like, in my head, I wish they looked a bit differently. I probably will never revisit them. It's like, okay, that project's done. Moving on next. So I'm glad to hear you like them.
I do.
No, I like them too. But like, yeah,
that's fun.
I don't want to poo-poo
them. They're not your favorite.
They're not my favorite.
Well, and I think what I like is all the different, I can really see the different textiles you used in the circles, because they are so large on the pants. So
I think it's why I don't like the pants, is because I was just trying to cover space as quickly as possible, and so there's not a lot of cohesion in it. By the time I got to being done almost the back half, or the back side of the trousers, like the bottom half, I really like. It's like, I should have just done that the whole time. So I learned something from them. Like, oh, this is a better style. This is a better way of using the space. But yeah, they're a learning experience. Right. It's really hard to work on clothing, actually. Like, at first I wanted to deconstruct the entire pair of pants, like just unstitch them and then re-sew them back. But I don't have a very good sewing machine, and it would have been a mess.
Well, I've wondered that, because so many people are so into embroidering on clothing anymore. And I've wondered if that's an easy thing to do or a real struggle to stay within the shape of the shirt or pants or whatever it is.
Yeah, it's not something I excel at. Like, it takes time to think about like how the garment is already. I recently came across two really excellent men's Carhartt shirts, like short sleeve button up, from like the 90s, I think. And I did two of those shirts and I wanted to like, cover the entire shirt. But once I got started, it's like, that's going to look ridiculous. And the time, and it's really hard to sew on the collar and the sleeves and have it still look kind of organized. And so these days, if I'm going to do a piece of clothing, unlike the fancy pants from Capital, is just focus on one space of the shirt or the garment and not go all over the place. Just because it can look a bit wild. And yeah, it's really hard to stitch like on the sleeves and things like that.
So DMC floss is really expensive. What do you use for thread?
Whatever I can find.
Oh, okay. Okay.
DMC floss for like one skein is about $2, I guess.
Whoa.
I haven't checked on it in a while. It's pretty expensive. And I don't like, or at least for me, I don't enjoy the sheen or the shine of it. And so if I'm going to actually like mend my own clothing, like if my jeans tear, I'm going to use like Sashiko thread, like nice. I use a brand called Odoria. I can send you a link later, but they just do really cheap, really nice, plain Jane, like white Sashiko thread. But I only use that for my own garment mending. If I'm going to do a piece, I have, I guess, three kinds of thread I really like. And the first is, do you know the Daruma brand?
Nope. Mm-mm. Nope. Don't know that one.
It's basically like machine thread. It's like machine thread weight, like a heavy machine thread or thread you use to sew a button on. So it's not embroidery floss or thread at all. It's just like plain white spooled thread.
Mm-hmm.
But I like that because it's economical, and it's like a really sharp, clean line. So when I do detailed work, it still has like the contrast you can see. I really like using, I guess, thread you use to crochet lace on. Like, it's really tough, really thick. It maintains its shape really nicely. But I really like using that, but it's kind of hard on the hands. And what else do I use? I have a color palette, for lack of a better word, I discovered with this weaving company. It's like 3-ply cotton thread that you would use for a loom, but it comes like in this really excellent kind of muted primary color palette. But I buy that in bulk on, we call them cones. Mm-hmm. And last, a buddy of mine, she owns her own natural thread dyeing company here in Tokyo. It's called Aneste now. It used to be called Tamaricious. But her and her husband do naturally dyed thread. They do like Sashiko thread in the quantity of like DMC basically, and about the same price. But then she does like a smaller, finer thread. And anytime you see like a colored thread, it's probably from her. Like the yellow, anytime I use yellow, it's from her company, which is just her own personal startup business. But yeah, basically three kinds.
I find the thread thing fascinating because for us here, DMC is the standard low cost, high quality thread.
And
we have such an array of choices. And then you go anywhere else in the world, it seems like the choices get limited in a hurry. But then, like you described, there are threads that we would never see that sound to me like they have some interesting characteristics to them.
Yeah, when I first started, I was frustrated that I couldn't use DMC because, like, you see these really gorgeous colors and, like, the way people can mix them. I was like, oh, that's such a bummer because, like, what am I going to do? And I think that's why I started using predominantly, like, white crochet thread or, like, the white hand sewing thread. Like, nothing fancy. You can buy it anywhere. But it's because it was most economical. And I still kind of wanted to draw. Because with DMC, like, you can draw shapes and like make really cool things. And with sewing thread, you can't easily fill in a space. It'll look kind of, you know, tangled or jumbled. And so I think that's kind of what started the wavy lines, at least, or like using the thread to make shapes rather than drawing a shape and filling it in with thread.
I just want to send everybody we talk to who is outside of the U.S. a box full of DMC. Here, it's not expensive. Here, take it.
But that being said, like the again, the Diadema brand is super cheap here, like $1.50 for a little, like, I'm holding such my phone, like you can see it, but like a little hand card of sewing thread.
Oh, okay.
It's super cheap. The crochet thread's really cheap too. And whenever, again, there's no tourists now, but when there were tourists, like, hey, I'm in Tokyo, can I meet you and can we hang out? It's like, yeah, sure. The first place I take them is to Eneste, the naturally dyed thread shop. It's funny to watch them shop, like, because it's like choosing candy. They're so like brightly colored and gorgeous.
Yeah.
I take for granted sometimes how easy it is for me to buy that kind of thread, whereas from the States or elsewhere, it's like a rare treasured item. So yeah. I'm lucky in other ways, but yeah.
Right.
Well, Lindsay, this has been fun. Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, thank you. I hope that made sense.
Oh, yeah.
Being a teacher, I'm actually not very good with my words, so I hope that's clear enough.
We got to learn about the art. I really enjoy your art, and you know, it has a thing to it that really catches me, at least catches my eye. I enjoy it. So
thank you very much.
It's beautiful. Thank you for talking with us.
No, thank you for your time.
Yep. All right, and thanks to everybody for listening.